Hello and welcome to SITFA Speaks, the podcast where we explore the latest issues in public financial management affecting people, place and planet. I'm your host, Jess, and today we're looking at the financial future of the public sector following recent changes and government updates, along with SITFA's engagement with Parliament at the Select Committee hearing on local government finance. Joining me today to break it all down is SITFA CEO Owen Mackley. Owen, hi.
Hi, good to see you, Jess.
Great to see you. Thanks for joining us today. Owen, what did you raise at Parliament's recent Select Committee hearing?
So the first and I think most important thing I said to them was to recognise the remarkable job that local authorities, and not just local authorities, other public services have done, but particularly local authorities in the last 15 years. That in the face of relentless increases in demand for many of their services, we have seen countless examples of transformation, innovation, determination, resilience to continue serving residents and other service users. We've seen shifts into early intervention. We've seen collaboration with multi-agency partners. And it is a simple fact that if we hadn't seen that, we would be seeing many more examples of public services getting into severe financial difficulty. That said, it is also clear that the pressures are stark. We're seeing growing deficits, growing waiting lists in many public services. We're seeing growing numbers of councils needing exceptional support just to stay with nose above water. And I told the committee that there's often talk of a need for early warning systems. Well, my view is that the canary is not just singing. It is lying on the floor of the coal mine gasping for breath. That's just how significant it is. And finally, it was clear as a theme at the committee that there's not going to be large-scale additional funds needed in this macroeconomic environment. So we need to see follow-through on the large-scale reforms that are underway, have been promised by government, be they funding models, be they policy changes, be it the drivers of demand in adult social care and children's services, in housing, in particular in special educational needs, but also in health. We're seeing lots of promises to move into more prevention and community services, etc. So I think we need wide-scale policy reform, not just pleas for ever-growing amounts of money.
Absolutely. And you've already touched upon the global turbulence and uncertainty, which means that the government has many competing priorities. How can we ensure that the ongoing challenges facing England's public services are not overlooked during this time?
It's clear that the government and the Chancellor face massive competing pressures. The Chancellor's having to juggle what are seismic changes to the world order in astonishingly fast turnaround events. And the impact of those sorts of things and the latest changes around tariffs with the consequent impacts on world trade and so on, they look like they've got the potential to wipe out any headroom within current forecasts, in addition to what looks to be a clear and growing need to boost investment into defence and business support, etc. But I'm also clear that public services aren't there just to be grateful recipients of funding left over should the economy do well. So many of our public services form the fabrics of our communities and indeed act as partners to help create the conditions, the wider determinants, if you like, for where growth can occur. So I think we need to continue making the case for public services, not just for demands for funding, but as partners between central government, health, local government, emergency services, others, that they can play a key role in driving employability, economic growth, health and well-being, etc. But I'm also confident that the government knows about the challenges facing many of our public services, and indeed many of the reforms that have been promised are recognition of the changes that are needed. So I'm confident that however demanding and challenging it gets in a volatile world environment, I think the importance of addressing those challenges in public services, that's not going away.
Local government funding system is widely seen as broken. And given these current financial pressures on councils and the NHS, what realistic steps could the government take to address these issues?
It's good to see that there is already extensive work underway. We've seen the first consultation on proposals to reform the local government funding system. There's widespread agreement that we need to see a massive update to many of the metrics and the scales and the valuation years that are used. Many of them haven't been adjusted for decades, let alone recent times. So we need to see changes there. Updates to formulas that are used, and it's interesting to see the government choosing deprivation as an important indicator. I think it will be important to ensure that other things aren't lost. So, for example, rurality is an important part in many places. So there is promise of reform coming with further consultations coming soon after the spending review. We'll have to review those to see what impacts they will have. But it's also clear that we need to see policy reform as well. It's not enough simply to call for more money. There won't be significant more money. It's not enough just to have competitions for different slices of an inadequate funding cake. So we also need to see real reform to drive into the drivers of demand in many of these services, to see a sustained shift into prevention, a sustained shift into community rather than acute provision, greater collaboration between different service partners. And it's great to see a renewed focus on place. Many of these services that we're talking about need to see the voluntary sector, local authorities, health, education, other partners all working together to collaborate. And alongside that, we've just got to see more flexibility. We've got to see fewer ring fences. We've got to see longer term settlements to really empower local partners to work together to address some of these challenges we face.
In terms of reorganising the public sector, whether through local government restructuring or changes to NHS England, for example, this is often framed as a way to cut bureaucracy and improve efficiency. Do you see these changes helping with the immediate financial crisis?
So I think we've got to be realistic that many of these changes aren't going to give immediate financial savings. In fact, many of them will be really demanding on constrained officer, on other leader, local politicians' time. But I think, in my view, the reality is that we simply have to look at ways of streamlining how public services are provided. In local government, for example, there's been a patchwork quilt of approaches to different structures over the years. And I think greater consistency of how organisations are arranged would be good. I think it's an important debate to have about scale versus local place, but I think it is absolutely clear that the smaller the units of operation for these new councils, the more we'll see any savings that are available reduced if you have to break up and disaggregate larger services. And looking across the councils that have had to claim exceptional financial support, the majority of the 30 that are in exceptional financial support, the overwhelming majority of them, are smaller London boroughs, they are metropolitan districts, they are small unitaries, and all bar four have populations under 400,000. So it's important to have that debate about getting the right sort of scale. But I think the most important thing is any structure can be made to work if you've got the right approaches of collaboration, of pooling expertise, pooling budgets where appropriate, reducing ring fences. So my personal view is that it is important to see this through. There will be savings there from administration and so on, but more importantly, there'll be savings from better joining up of local services, local delivery partners, etc.
In terms of the value of collaboration when there is no new funding available, are there any other non-financial initiatives or reforms that you see helping?
I think, as I've said, the continued push into prevention rather than the provision of acute services in all sectors is important. And whilst we've got to be realistic about the impact of new technologies and so on in the short term, it is also the case that there is the potential to have radical transformation using some of these new technologies. I think we've also got to be less precious about how things are done. So I do think it's the case that even in two-tier local government, as there's been, there could have been greater sharing of services, greater collaborating between different sorts of organisations. So we have to retain a focus on constantly looking at whether there are ways of doing things differently, collaborating together across different service lines to coalesce around the needs of the user of services, be they resident, patient, etc. Because it is utterly clear that no government can or should spend its way out of the sort of challenges we face. So a combination of continued focus on new technologies, transformation, collaboration, early intervention and prevention, a combination of all of those alongside policy reform is what's going to be needed to deal with the challenges that all public services face today.
And to pick up on your point about emergency financial support, EFS, there's been a lot of focus on these short-term fixes. Do you think the recent measures announced will provide stability?
So it's clear that exceptional financial support has been one of the only mechanisms available. And so, yes, it has been a way of kicking the can down the road of retaining sustainability in the short term. It's increasingly not exceptional when it's happening year after year. I would question how supportive it is, because it's essentially borrowing to fund day-to-day operation expenses. And one of the Chancellor's golden rules is that the government isn't going to borrow to fund operational running costs. Well, in certain parts of the sectors, that is exactly what is happening. And so I think that it is a concerning short-term fix. But I'm also confident the government knows this. Nobody would say that this is effective financial management. And so there is a desire from both local public services, but also from the government, to not rely on these sorts of things just to stay sustainable. I think the biggie that has got to be addressed is special educational needs. SIPFA and other bodies have published reports on this. The NEO has, the County Councils Network and the LGA have. It's clear that the current situation is not doing the most important thing, which is providing the support that children and families need in this space. But it's also not providing that support in a way that is bankrupting or risking bankrupting too many services. So we need to get away from short-term fixes. And as we come up towards the end of the current deadline for when the statutory override is going to run out, we need to see systemic reforms, ways of coping with those deficits, probably through transitional measures, because it's clear that in addition to not working, it's drawing in ever more resources from many organisations who are now having to borrow themselves just to fund the cash flow. EFS is not good financial management, but nor is statutory overrides and just kicking cans down the road. So systemic reforms, as we've said throughout this podcast, is what's going to be necessary.
And finally, what would you like to say to local authority leaders and public sector leaders as they navigate these financial challenges?
I would say to all public finance practitioners, we'll continue to be there supporting you either individually, to the sector as a whole. As I said right at the start, there's been remarkable work in so many public services over the last 15 years, relentless approaches to finding ever more innovative ways to cope with increasing demands and increasing costs and constrained funds. So we've just got to keep doing what the sector does so well. I think to finance practitioners, stay true to your principles and your ethics and your integrity. At times we have to be the fearless tellers of inconvenient truths. We must continue to do that. And SIPFA will continue to have your backs in making those judgment calls, because it's clear that the pressures are severe at the moment. But I'd also say we need to celebrate the public service that is done so well in difficult circumstances. So whilst being realistic about the challenges we face, let's not be shy in proudly celebrating good practice where we see it. And it is absolutely the case that public service providers, finance practitioners up and down the country continue to do remarkable things in challenging circumstances. And so I pay tribute to you all, and I look forward to continuing to support you to navigate through very, very difficult and trying times.
Thanks, Owen. And for those listening, make sure to follow us on social media for more and never miss an episode. Previous episodes of SIPFA Speaks can be found on SIPFA's website or wherever you like to listen to podcasts. We'll be back next month. Until then, goodbye.